Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, and it is we're in June already.
June, yep.
It's going to be the end of the year before we're... Yeah, time.
But then again, you know what? It's all good because markets continue to be resilient in the face of everything. We have the old sell in May and go away. Nah, didn't work. How about the June?
I thought it was buy in May and go away.
Maybe. What about the...
supposed to go away.
What about the June swoon?
The June swoon. I thought that referred to the San Francisco Giants back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, it may have. But you know what? Nothing seems to be... This is like the indestructible market. We had a very interesting thing happen the other day, though. On Monday, there was a release of a very important data point, the ISM manufacturing number. It tells you a little bit of an advanced reading on the economy. It's pretty up to date. And it looks at manufacturing. So the number comes out at 53.2 or something like that.
Okay.
All right, now
This is one of those leverage numbers where if it's over 50 or under 50, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, it's kind of interesting because if it's over 50, it's good, and if it's rising, it's good. If it's under 50, let's say it's at 48, it's contraction. But if you have 48, and then you have 48.3, there's less contraction, so that's good. It's the stupidest thing because, on one hand, everybody knows that over 50 essentially is expansion and under 50 is contraction. So the bottom line is if it's over 50, just say good. Under 50, bad. But it doesn't matter. They make up all sorts of crazy things about this. The number comes out at 53.2, much less than expected.
Right.
Markets are not happy.
Hmm.
Within 30 minutes, a weird thing happened. A revision to the number.
Oh. Handy.
56.
Oh. Wow.
Yep. No.
Wait, how can you be that far off?
I don't know, but then in another 30 minutes, they revise it again. 55.4. Unheard of.
That's ridiculous.
There was some kind of a weird adjustment, something about how they released it wrong, and then there was something about the calculation, how they did it, because the seasonal adjustments, and then there was this, and there was all these different scenarios. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, maybe it was just as simple as the markets didn't like it, so we better change the number. I don't know. It was really odd. This is not a usual circumstance for this organization, the ISM, to do such a major faux pas.
That's very suspicious.
Yeah. But so market said, okay, that was good. Now, we had a lot of other interesting things happen. We saw that the automobile manufacturing was back pretty much to all-time highs. Automobile sales. On U.S.-based and global.
Yeah, that's pretty peculiar. I thought that was a weird situation. I don't notice people are flocking to buy cars at the moment.
Well, it seems they are. So maybe you're looking in the wrong way. Maybe it's not in your neck of the woods. It could be a whole bunch of things. But it was a pretty substantial print. This has been actually moving higher for the last several months. And you're seeing that, although most of the car companies haven't really been doing well, I think a lot of the reason is due to the fact that there is an enormous amount of incentives that are playing out here.
Mm.
You know? So, as a matter of fact, I went to Ford recently, and we were looking at a couple different cars for my kid. He's going to college. I want to get something a little bit bigger, better on gas.
Get him a Focus. It's a great car.
Well, he wants something a little bit bigger. He needs a little bit bigger. I want something that is sturdy. You know, maybe like an Escape or one of those things. Just one of the SUVs. Anyway... So I'm talking to the guy, and I said, well, what's the cost of this thing? He said, well, it all depends on what. Okay, let's start with the base. What's the price? So I don't know. He gave me some price. Like, let's say it was $25,000, just as a number, okay? He says, but you get the incentive for blah, blah. That takes off $1,200, okay? And then you get the da-da-da incentive, and that's another $1,000, okay? And there's like one other, he said. And then he said, by the way, do you have a car in your family that's not a Ford? I'm like, yes. Oh, well, if you're going to lease it, we can give you the non-Ford leasing program and relate it to that car. That's another, like, $1,200 off. By the time I was done, it was like $6,000 off. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that'll move a lot of cars.
Exactly. So that's why, obviously, the car companies are not actually seeing a major ramp up in their price, probably due to the fact that margins are compressing.
if there's any margin at all.
Right, exactly. This is going to be a big week for economics, by the way. We have tomorrow coming out the ADP payroll number. It's going to be released. This is the private payrolls, and it's a precursor to the all-big, ever-powerful BLS number that is coming out on Friday. Expectations for this is about 210,000 jobs added for tomorrow. Tomorrow we also have several productivity numbers. We have the ISM non-manufacturing number. I am certain they are sharpening their pencils and making sure and checking it twice and three times and four times before they put this out. So this is the service gauge. This is the it's pretty much what makes up the U.S. economy.
Nowadays, yes.
I mean,
you know, when I was in school.
Uh-oh. You're not going to talk about college. You're not going to be talking about a potato that you had a hole because no, walking nothing.
We had a crash in '69, and the '70s were just miserable with Jimmy Carter and Nixon and all the rest of it. And I was reading a lot of because I had kind of put myself through school on penny stocks, and then you couldn't do that anymore. That just ended, and so I did a lot of research, and all I kept reading about in the financial magazines and newspapers throughout the '70s, and in fact into the '80s. Was how the United States was going to become a service economy. They were predicting this years ago.
That's impressive.
But I never, it was pretty generalized. It reminded me a little bit of how everyone predicted about 15 years ago that all, most internet traffic is going to be through mobile devices. And it took forever, but it's pretty much the case. Most people use their phone now for the internet, and it's ludicrous to me. But I mean, I do it too. But the, but I never fully understood, I don't think, what a service economy was until recently when I realized it's just everybody works at McDonald's.
Well, actually, isn't it all about didn't this really all come about in the 80s, which was the me generation, the me decades, all about me, and really pampering myself and providing for myself. And basically what you're going to do is you no longer cook, you have somebody else do it.
Yeah.
You no longer iron. You have somebody else do it. You no longer do your own.
There was that element for sure.
Mowing your lawn. Somebody else does it.
Right. Everybody does something for somebody. Right. So we're just a couple notches short of having butlers.
Yeah, but everybody does one thing, and then everybody else around them does the rest of the stuff for them. So I am an investment advisor. I do that. I don't do my pool. I don't do my lawn.
Right. You hire people.
Yeah. And then my people hire people.
Right.
So that's, what the service is all about.
I have a gardener that hires out.
Yeah.
And he gets a bunch of, of course, we don't want to know what he's paying them.
Exactly.
But
I have a cleaning service that we pay, and I know that they're paying their people ridiculously low rates.
Yeah. So this
and they're just sitting there pointing, go here, go there, go here, go there. What would the world be like?
Sustain itself.
What would the world be like if we actually did things for ourselves?
I do most things for myself. I cook for myself. The only thing I really hire out is gardening.
And things like there are things that have become too complicated to do for yourself. For example, taxes. To a degree.
Right. I don't do my own taxes. I can't.
Right. To a degree.
And by the way, and I want to mention this, I have a certificate. I got certified, two of them actually, to do taxes. I went through the courses. I learned how to do taxes. I can do taxes. But I can't bring myself to do them.
Yeah, well, it's a little dry. But, at the same time, you also, for example, I remember the old days where something was wrong with my car. We'd pop the hood. You plug around it a few things, everything. And these days, I have no idea what's inside of a car.
No, that's because the cars have been designed so you can't work on them.
Right, I have no idea. I wouldn't even know.
I used to tune my cars when I was younger. I used to tune the cars. They had one of those those guns that you could get. Strobe.
Yep.
And you strobe, and there'd be a little bunch of stuff on the flywheel, and you'd line it up with the little arrow, and then you get the car to be perfectly tuned. And yeah, you can't even find any of that stuff now. It's like a closed system. And of course, my spark plugs on my car, which is 20 years old, I took the spark plugs to 110,000 miles, and they didn't even need replacing.
And so, then in the old days, you used to take the air filter. Is there even an air filter, that round?
Right.
Air filter thing, you pop that off, you get to the carburetor, you kind of juice it a little bit with some kind of spray, clean it up a little bit,
Yeah. Now it's all fuel injection.
Yeah, so I wouldn't even, I'm not touching it. I'm sure I'll explode or something.
You'd ruin it.
You need computers. That's what you got. You got to get computers to do it. So, anyways, economy, so we have a service economy, and we have the number coming out in a day on that. Then we have at 2 p.m. the Fed's beige book, which is a culmination of all the Fed districts and what each of the Fed governors are saying about their various economies. That maybe we saw an expansion in the housing and construction in this area, and there was, it's kind of this whole thing they just repeat back on a more of an area base, a specific geographic base. And then Friday we have the jobs number coming out, looking for about a 6.4% unemployment rate and about 215,000 added. Now remember last month there was about 288,000 people added and 800,000 removed from the workforce. So that's a million swing.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, not a good impressive.
Not a good impressive, no. But, this service economy and the whole idea that the U.S. is changing and we have to do things, as you mentioned, like, for example, we're seeing things happen like cell phones become mobile phones / the car phone become a cell phone, which becomes a mini computer. You know where this comes from? This comes from innovation. Innovation, and where do you get that kind of knowledge? Stanford University. They have this innovation and entrepreneurship certificate program where you could learn from the best from Silicon Valley. It's a great sponsor of ours, and I really encourage you, and so does John, right?
Yeah, and I'm working with the best who can make a segue like that.
Yeah.
I kind of miss these segues. I used to do it with the other thing we had for now.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a lot of fun. Whatever that was fun. But these courses are 100% online, so you can work at your own pace.
I would recommend the Stanford courses for sure. I mean, they do a great job.
Yep.
It's true.
You learn about business frameworks, insights from successful entrepreneurs, and you basically will be able to join an international network of innovators. I mean, why not, right? I mean, the whole world is looking for innovation, the next great thing, and you could be the one that actually does so. But, you got to get some education in it. So there are webinars that are going on. But you can go right now to ideas.stanford.edu, use the coupon code podcast when you register for your first course, and you get a 10% off. You can go to ideas.stanford.edu or call 650-741-1596. Moving along. Let's see what we got next. Japan. Hey, do you know their inflation is hitting up on the highest level it's been in 20 years?
Yeah, I wonder. Well, that's right. Because this was a big scandal, or at least in some quarters of Japan. Isn't it just directly related to the sales tax hike? They jacked the sales tax up to, it almost sounds like a VAT, VAT. It's really high. It's like 20%+ or something.
Yeah, and what happened was people just went out and said, oh, we're not waiting. So they pushed everything up. Now, this is the opposite of the weather excuse. The weather excuse is, oh, nobody's buying, and what's going to happen? We're going to have a lot of pent-up demand, and that's going to be good, so we're going to have to buy stocks, and things are going to get much better. It was this artificial situation. That's
right.
And you get that bullish thing going on there, right? Now, in Japan, they get an artificial move because of the sales tax, but they don't say, oh, that's good. They like it. They like that all this stuff is doing better. They like that. They see all these numbers doing better. Although Japan was down pretty significantly the first quarter. Japanese equity markets were down like 10%. But now things are coming back a little bit. And Shinzo Abe, the gent who came up with Abenomics, is trying to talk the markets into once again moving higher. That, hey, you know what? While we do have this inflation, it may not be sustainable. We may have to put in some more into the system. Now, I was thinking about this whole sales tax thing and how it pushed people to do something and how it really did an incredible job on not only inflation, but also on retail sales, et cetera. And I was thinking that my old argument that the Fed should stop their stimulus and have the specter of a higher interest rate environment would kickstart people into going out and rushing to get their mortgages, to borrow what they could so they could spend on whatever it is before things get out of hand. I don't know why they're not there. Although there's some talk about it right now. In the last couple of days, there's been some talk about this with the Fed that, hey, maybe we got to stop this and maybe it could actually spur on the economy if we raise rates. I don't know. You think that will happen?
I don't know if it'll happen or not, but you know, they don't. I mean, they are playing with fire with this inflation. You know, we've done a pretty good job of maintaining status quo, despite the fact that we do a lot of quantitative easing, printing money, as it were. I mean, it's not really printing money; it's this other mechanism. But you know, and we don't see any inflationary penalty. But when you start seeing inflation, you have to be. I think the Japanese have to be real careful, because right now, with the yen at 102,
mm-hmm.
they have the opportunity to really do some serious damage in the export market, especially in their automobiles segment. But if they start getting inflation in domestically, then it's going to jack the prices up, and it's not going to. So that benefit of the 102 is not going. There's going to be no benefit at all.
Right, it's going to benefit the exports, but the imports are going to be disastrous.
Well, the import, right. It benefits the exports now, but if there's inflation and you stay at 102, I mean, the inflation gets translated into overseas prices, which will hurt exports.
Yeah, and the problem is they have to pay a lot more for anything that they import. Therefore,
that's the case. Yeah, no, yeah. Importing is already that's lost. So you're importing, you're not going to get a lot of imports because it's going to be too expensive at 102. So the imports would drop off, which means the demand for imports might increase. But whatever the case is, this is not a good mix, is what I'm trying to say. That
right. And what happens is the import, or let's look at it differently, the input costs for some of the things that they do are going to go much higher.
Right, right, for parts and from stuff they buy from China.
Right, and on top of that, the domestic economy really does suffer in a way, because if you have this situation going on and you have the yen dropping in rate, of course, in level, what they could do is buy domestically, but they have this other inflation that's going on a domestic basis, not just an external basis. It's a lot of stuff going on here. But still, over the last two months, with all the things that we've seen, bonds have been bought. Although the last 2 days, there was an interesting turn. We saw a breakdown of a trend line on, for example, the TLT, the long bond fund, the ETF that is a long 20-plus treasuries.
Mm-hmm.
It did break down over the last couple of days. Now, that doesn't mean it won't just turn around again. But all of a sudden, we're seeing this change in the dynamic of the bonds that they're being sold. They've been bought for, I don't know, the last 2 months, ridiculously. Now, maybe this is ahead of the ECB that's coming out Thursday. So we have Wednesday, a lot of numbers coming out. Thursday, a couple of numbers. But Thursday is a gigantic, enormous, monumental day in the world, because the ECB is coming out with some kind of rate announcement.
Right.
Now, what are they going to do? It's choices. They're going to lower rates, possibly. They're going to do some bond buying. Very difficult. But the big talk right now, and it's gaining some momentum, is this whole idea of negative deposit rates credited to bank reserves that are held at the central bank. I don't know. Did we talk about this?
I think we touched on it, because it's so wacky. Well, you might as well explain it again.
So what happens is that...
Since you get a negative interest, right?
Yeah, so, well, you pay.
So you put $10,000 in the bank, and you walk away anytime you want with nine.
Yeah, exactly. But it's more so the banks themselves, when they have excess reserves, so they have all this extra money because they need reserves, of course. And the second thing is that the money that they're not lending to the street, for whatever reason, could be because they don't have the demand, or maybe they don't want to. So what happens is that they put this money in a very safe place with the central bank, and let's say they get 0.25%. So they leave it there. Right, they just leave it there. They just accumulate some interest on it, and it's sitting around. It's very safe. It's good. Well, what the ECB may do, something that has never been done historically at all, is to charge banks for money left on reserve at the central bank. Therefore, what are the banks going to do? Well, if they leave the money there, they're going to be charged, let's say, 0.25% or maybe 0.15%, whatever the number they say is going to be. And then what happens is that you're going to see, obviously, their income go down, right? Just because they're not going to be getting this anymore. Not only are they not going to be getting income on interest on their money on reserves, they're going to lose money. So now they're going to be, wait a minute, we don't want to do that. So now they take the money out. Now, where do they go? Well, they're going to have to lend it. If they lend it, now they're going to have to put it out on the street, because basically they're lending it to the central banks. They're going to have to find another place. So maybe they'll put it, I don't know, loan it out to people to buy homes, or you know, do something with it. And the idea is that that will stimulate the economy because there'll be more money out there. I always found it very fascinating that the whole idea of stimulating an economy is to get people to push up their debt. Doesn't, you know, aren't we always taught that, you know, go through life, you buy a house, you pay it off, let's say, you know, generally speaking, you save money, you don't have any much debt outstanding. But what they're trying to do is push debt on individuals so they could buy their homes and all these things and have people more indebted, not just utilizing money that they've saved to buy things. I find that so ass backwards.
That is an interesting observation.
But that's the whole point. If we see that consumer credit has risen dramatically, that's a good sign. People are buying things. Well, wait a minute. What happened to this, the old-fashioned, you know, when I make enough money, I'll save it, and I'll buy that that radio that I want? Not anymore. Everything has to be, you know, we have to have everything we have, plus we have to lever ourselves to get more. And that's happiness for the economy.
Well, at the moment, I guess whatever, you know, these formulas change.
Mm-hmm. They change with like the wind. Anyway, so this is going to be Thursday. Now, what is going to happen? This is the big issue. This is a big question. So first of all, it's an experiment if they go to the negative deposit rate. So we're not going to see anything for a few months, obviously, really play out there. But one of the big things that the ECB is doing, even though they say they're not doing it, but they are, is trying to push down the value of the euro. Euro went from about $1.40 down to about 1.36 recently. There's a lot of shorts coming in right now because the belief is that the ECB is going to do something very powerful, maybe on the lines of what Japan did, although they can't buy bonds, they'll have to do something else, and that the intent will be to drop the euro down in value and to flush the banks with cash that they can no longer put on the books of the Fed but have to lend out. So the whole point is to push the banks to get themselves leveraged again, to get people to get leveraged again, in order to stabilize the economy.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's a house of cards.
No, I mean, I was serious when I was saying all that, but then I heard myself say it, and I thought it was pretty ridiculous.
Ludicrous. Totally ludicrous.
Oh, gosh. So that's going to be Thursday, and that's going to be big, because if the ECB does not come out with something extraordinary, because there's a lot of betting on the fact they're going to do something, I mean, big. If they don't come out with something extraordinary, you watch that euro just go flying higher. They got to really, and I think they know this, obviously, but I don't know how much they can actually do to take the euro down and to really, I mean, they're going to have to really do something extraordinary because already things are priced into the markets. Now, remember something, that Mario Draghi a year and a half ago or so came out with his famous butterfly speech, and that cratered, at the time it cratered the euro, and it created incredible amount of backdrop of security and stability for the bonds of all the various nations out there that were having problems. And now we are at all-time lows of interest rates on Italian bonds and on all the different peripherals, Spain, et cetera. All-time lows. Dropped like a rock.
Which brings me to the point. The all-time lows, the interest rates you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, which means the bond prices have gone up.
Yes.
Which brings me to the point. Where's this massive bond collapse that we're supposed to have seen late last year?
It's a shocker. Who's buying all this stuff? I mean, who's buying the bonds? It's got to be sovereign wealth funds. It has to be. You went in after his speech where, by the way, he made the speech and said that he will do everything in his power, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to do and to hold it. They didn't actually do anything. They didn't actually put anything into play. They did some what's called the LTRO and a few other things, but they really didn't do anything after that speech. It was all – everything that's happened is based on the implicit promise that they will be there rather than any effective transactions. And that's where I'm wondering what's going to happen now, because you didn't get the same effect with the commentary that's been coming out. So they actually have to do something now.
Well, we'll find out this week, and next week will be an interesting show.
Yep. And the big question, obviously, that everybody's probably sitting on their chairs, on the edge of their chairs, wondering is, what do you invest in? Or what do you not invest in, considering what's going on? Do you want to be in the banks in Europe because they're going to be getting some kind of a stimulus package to offset maybe the negative deposit rates, or is it negative deposit rates going to be bad for them? Do you want to be in the home builders and home the builders out there? What about gold? You know, if the euro comes down really hard, there's going to be a big buy of the U.S. dollar, probably. Probably be some buying of the yen. Does gold go just kaput straight down? I mean, right?
You asked too many questions.
Oh, sorry. Anyway, these are the questions that people want to know.
These things is like crude oil, too high.
Yeah.
Natural gas is low, which is common. Gold, probably too high at 1246.
But 1246, very interesting how it's dropped recently about $50. And this is on the euro coming down. The dollar really has not been doing anything major. Not a lot of moving.
The euro is still $1.36, way too high as far as I'm concerned. The yen is too high at 102. It should be 9900 max. The British pound is extremely overpriced at $1.67.
You know, there was something interesting about Britain last week. I forgot who it was, but maybe it was the main fellow there. He said that if Juncker, who is a member of the ECB and that whole grouping over there, I think he's from Luxembourg or somewhere, or I'm not sure where he's from, but if he becomes the next ECB president, it may force the UK to pull out of the euro.
Well, they've been wanting, some people within the UK have definitely been wanting to do that. And they believe that since they're still an ancillary, they still have their own currency, even though it's tied to the euro in a funny way. It still trades independently. But I think they're still responsible for supporting the euro, even though you still get British pounds, even though it's funny. I went to England some years back when after they made the transition, and I had all these British pounds. And, oh, no, we can't take those. Why?
Really?
Why? Yeah. And they said, these are old pounds. These are no good. But they looked exactly the same. But there was a little thing. There's a little seal on the British pounds that are official now that says ER or something on it. It's a little bitty thing on there. And I had to take, but I said, this money's no good? No, I could go to a bank, like a real bank.
Because then they'll retire it.
They took the money and retired it and gave me the same exact. The bill wasn't even any different except for this little bitty mark. Mm-hmm. And I found that peculiar. Why couldn't they have just kept the other bills in circulation? It just baffled me that they did it this way. It just, I don't know.
Yeah,
I
that's England for you. Then you know what? They're very proud. Very proud of their pence and their pounds.
Yeah, well.
Let's talk about Apple for a second here. Let's talk about, first, let's get to this whole Carl Icahn thing. You see the scandal that's going on here with Icahn?
Yeah, and Phil Mickelson, and then some gambler.
Right. So the SEC and the FBI are investigating whether or not Carl Icahn tipped Las Vegas better Billy Williams about his investments that may have moved markets. Authorities are also probing whether Walters passed on information to golfer Phil Mickelson, and they're looking into the trading in Clorox and Dean Foods. Icahn says, "Well, I don't know anything about an inquiry." Meanwhile, there's a formal inquiry, but he doesn't know anything about it. He says, of course, we are always very careful to observe all legal requirements. He says that the suggestions that he was involved in any improper trading is inflammatory and speculative. And he never traded in Dean Foods. Interesting about this is he also said, I don't even know who Phil Mickelson is.
Is that divorce from the day-to-day life of the average person in the world?
That just can't be.
No, it makes no sense.
I mean, you know, even if you're not a golfer, I'm sure you've heard of the guy.
Yeah, you have to. It's like you never heard of Tiger Woods.
Right, exactly. So
same level.
So what's interesting is there was a lot of trading in options, et cetera, before the buyout or the announced plans of Icahn Industries with Clorox and all that. And yet, you know, you got to wonder every time you see that there's some significant amount of option trading prior to a announcement of major, you know, buyout or acquisition, you know, what's going on there and why aren't there more people that are prosecuted on this? So somebody leaked something. I mean, I don't know, maybe Billy and Carl Icahn were shopping and they went down the cleaning aisle and I'm buying that company. I'm buying that. You like that bleach? I'm buying the other. I'm buying Clorox. Get that bleach. So I don't know. We'll see. But this is kind of interesting. I mean, you know, he's got his hand in so many things, Carl, that he's surely going to find some problem somewhere.
Yeah.
But Anyway, one more thing. One more thing. Don Sterling, Los Angeles Clippers, fellow who spoke with a rather bad message to many of the athletes and the community that he's so involved in, racist remarks and all sorts of bungled apologies, amazingly, is going to be paid.
They had a film of him. It was on some obscure station. He apparently went to a black church, big black church down in San Diego, and with cameras and everything running, and he sat through the service, and he was in the front row.
Oh, boy.
And it was just hilarious. He was, like, trying to shake hands with everybody and show that he's not a racist, I guess. I don't know.
This guy got $2 billion from Ballmer.
From a team worth 1.5. So Ballmer overpaid by a lot. $500 million is nothing to sneeze at.
And he's pissed off.
Yeah, I know. He figures he can get more money by suing the NBA for something or other. The guy's just the guy's really a bad actor.
Yeah, but I got to tell you something. The more it gives you a bad sense of what you could do here, and that there's no penalty. As a matter of fact, there was a premium for what he did. I mean, yeah. he can buy front row tickets with the money he's got. He's got to sit in the box as it is, right?
Yeah.
Now he can sit front row. He can buy the whole front row.
Yeah.
The entire front row he'll buy. And, yeah. He just...
Out like a bandit, basically. Yeah. By being himself.
Exactly. Now, I don't know if you saw the WWDC for Apple the other day.
I watched it.
I watched it, too. I thought the guy with the gray hair...
The guy with the haircut.
Yeah, the big gray hair. Lots of very significant gray hair.
Yeah.
I thought... Talk about polished.
Oh, yeah. No, he's good.
I mean, he's like one of those guys that you see on one of those infomercials.
He should be the front man for the company.
Yeah. And he's a little thin, though, isn't he? Did you notice that?
Well, he's a little skinny. Yeah, that's one of the... Just a style.
Mm. It's an Apple style. Everybody's got to look malnourished.
It's an ectomorph.
But a lot of the people at Apple, they look kind of... When they get up, they look very malnourished.
Yeah. Apparently, they don't have the good... Like, that never happens at Google. Where they have the restaurants and the fine dining. I mean, it's a great place to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Apple doesn't have anything, I don't think, approaching it.
Really? Oh, they probably have a lot of...
I've been to the Apple main cafeteria in the main, number one infinite loop or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't hold a candle to Google.
Actually, when I was at Apple, I went to one of the campus places, too. It was just like a little sandwich shop.
This was a little more elaborate than that. This was a pretty classic, they have a lot of variety, a lot of stations. You can pretty much get whatever you want. But compared to Google, Google is the ultimate in dining at one of these Silicon Valley companies. They have, for one thing, they have like about seven of these food courts. And the quality is so above and beyond what you would expect in a food court. I mean, they have like a guy who really knows what he's doing making pizza in a pizza oven. They have all the soft drinks that are at Google, like Coca-Cola and all these different drinks, specially formulated for Google with no high fructose corn syrup.
Wow.
They have, so you essentially have the old-fashioned Coke coming out of the Coke thing. And they have like salad bar to die for. I mean, they have it just elaborate, high-end, good chefs, good cooks operation that's nothing like the Apple or these other companies, which still has a reminiscence of a cafeteria. The Google thing doesn't. It's more organic, and it's just astonishing. It's actually remarkable.
Have you been to Redmond and the Microsoft campus?
I have.
That's... My recollection of that when I ate there a couple of times was it was like a comfort food kind of place.
Well, they have a lot of different restaurants up in Microsoft, and I only have been to one of them. And it was gorgeous compared to Google. It was prettier. It was a chalet. It was a big
right. A lot of wood.
And they actually had a piece of the Berlin Wall in the place as the art.
That's a little weird.
And apparently the chancellor or at the time gave the piece to Gates and Gates put it at the Microsoft in this cafeteria. And
that's weird. That's odd.
So it fit right in. And it was a really nice piece. It wasn't like one of just any old chunk. It had some nice graffiti on it. It was really attractive. And it was a conversation piece. But the food there I thought was quite good. It was very it wasn't up to the ludicrous levels of Google, but it was. It was. I thought it was fantastic. It was outstanding.
Hmm. Well, Apple now introduced a variety of things. There was some hope for a watch or for maybe a new iPhone. I was hoping for a new iPhone.
No, but they was expecting. The iPhone comes out late in the year. So, always.
Well, there was some kind of, you know, maybe a new Apple TV or maybe an Apple TV itself. But yeah. What they came out with was iOS 8. There were some cool things on there, actually. There was some nice sharing features. There's some weird things like, you know, you can act. Well, this is interesting. You can actually make a call from your computer and it would actually dial through your cell phone. So you take your iPhone, if you have it in the vicinity, and you dial out using this call feature, I guess, on your iPad if you don't have 3G or whatever, or 4G, or your computer, and it will actually use your cell phone to make the call.
Sounds a lot like Google Voice.
Yeah. Well, although, but the difference is it connects to your cell phone.
That's what Google Voice can do.
From an Android device?
No, from your computer.
Oh.
You go to Google Voice and you set it up in such a way that when you dial a number, which can be anywhere on a web page or something, it rings your cell phone and you're on the Google Voice through the cell phone.
Hmm. Well, this actually could call right through your computer, which if you want. Also, there's some sharing things.
That's Google Voice can do that too.
Okay. All right. So Google Voice is just as good. Okay. I got it.
I'm just saying that Apple has been stealing a lot of stuff from Google.
Well, not only that, they look like they stole a lot of stuff from Microsoft as well.
Yeah, and they also from some independent guys. In fact, when they bought the Beats guys, I feel sorry for anybody. In fact, we should look for some stocks to short. I feel sorry for anybody selling add-ons for Apple's, like speakers, because Beats just came out with some speakers as opposed to the headphones. They actually have little speakers now that will hook to the Mac, and those are now available, or they will shortly be available. And since it's going to be the Apple brand, it's going to destroy all those little third parties.
Well, then you got the one that you have to look at, which is clearly the logical choice if there is something that you want to short, is Skullcandy.
Yeah, I would say that's probably true.
You know, that would be the one that would be directly hit. Anyway, there's this new thing called HealthKit.
Is Skullcandy is traded?
Yeah.
I don't know this.
Yeah. IPO'd about a year ago.
Huh.
I don't know the symbol off the top of my head. What, maybe SKUL?
I'll dig it up.
SKUL, that's it. $7.50 from 20.
Yeah, well, it's doomed.
But what about Pandora?
I think, I've been a huge SKUL. I've been a huge fan of shorting Pandora.
I don't. It's held up. I mean, it did come down, but I do wonder how Pandora is going to actually hold. With the fact that clearly now the Beats is also a direct insult to Pandora.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Well, that stock doing? Let's take a look at that stock.
When did Skullcandy hit 20? Way back.
Well, it's not been around that long, but it was high as, I think, 20. Mm-hmm. This is what I looked at a second ago. It was, let's see.
Yeah, you're right. When it came out.
Yep, it came out at 20, and now it's 7.
And we dropped down to 3, and then it popped back up to 10, and now it's floating around 7.5. It looks like I might put that on our list.
Mm. All right, now, moving along, looks like heroin use is on the rise.
Yeah, good.
Now, there was a recent study done. I thought this was really
probably
kind of fascinating.
Better than the other stuff.
Yeah, well, 90% of the users are white and live outside urban areas, which I think goes very contrary to popular opinion.
Yeah, but that's okay. We can still arrest the black people.
Ah.
Just leave the whites alone.
Thank you, Mr. Sterling. Okay, and
That's what they're doing.
The research confirmed a link between the rise of opioid abuse and the growing use of heroin. Seems that
it's people that get on OxyContin and they get addicted, and it turns out that they can transition to heroin, and it saves them a bunch of money.
Saves a lot of money, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's probably... So this is a bad situation.
Heroin use has jumped 80% to 669,000 users. Now, the good news here is that if we go along with the rest of the world, we could start utilizing the excessive money that is being utilized to buy heroin into the GDP. Just like Italy's doing. Right?
Got it. Now that you mention it, I think actually we talked about this on No Agenda. It turns out that there is an edict either by the central bank or the European Council or somebody, that all the European countries are supposed to do this calculation that way.
How screwed up is that? We talked about this last time, but just ridiculous. But the good news is, I guess this is bullish for the stock market. So I guess that we have this 80% rise in heroin use between the years 2007 and 2012 is bullish. Bully, bully. So I'm going to say, hey, you know what? The economy is really doing well. Glad to see that all components, including illegal drug use, heroin use, and things of that nature, maybe crack, and maybe even, you know what? Maybe even the bath salts will come back into play, and that will be something good because, you know.
Oh, yeah, give us a better GDP.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a joke.
On the other hand, about 2.1 billion people, or almost about one-third of the world's population, were obese or overweight last year, researchers estimated, after examining 183 countries. The estimated number of overweight or obese people almost tripled from 857 million in 1980. And it seems the heaviest country in the world with the world's largest percent of obese people. Do you know that?
Mexico.
Mexico, yeah. You would think that, but it's the U.S.
I thought Mexico topped us. I think you may be reading old stats.
Oh, really?
Hmm. Yeah.
This is just out, but okay. It says
Well, maybe. I mean, but I just heard recently that Mexico just passed us.
Hmm. Well, you got China and India also there. I didn't realize that China had all these obese people.
Well, I don't know how that works.
The study was funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Take it from there. Let's see. Oh, did you see that the Seattle government, in Seattle, they just approved and passed the highest minimum wage in the country, $15 per hour minimum wage.
Yeah, yeah.
Now think about that.
That's going to happen everywhere.
$15 per hour. That means that the least, unless you're off the books, but the least amount you could make is $15 an hour, right? Minimum wage, right?
Yeah.
So if you take that and you work 40 hours a week, you're making $600 a week.
Right.
Which is $30,000 a year. So that means that
a little over, yeah.
You basically just obliterated poverty.
In Seattle.
In Seattle, right now.
Well, you obliterated poverty for anyone working.
Mm-hmm. Now, the question is it going to have more people working or less people working?
Well,
already we're seeing that places are closing down, consolidating, changing areas that they have facilities, et cetera, because this is absurd. You know, mandating, listen, I understand there needs to be a minimum wage, and the whole idea of minimum wage when it started was to make sure there was no abuse of employees, right?
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't because it was like, oh, we want you to do, it was that people were basically working at slave wages. Now, is $9 an hour slave wages? I don't know. Is $10? I mean, right now Seattle said that under 15 is considered a wage that's not acceptable to be made for whatever the job may be. So I just wonder what's going to happen to companies like a Walmart or a McDonald's. If we, let's assume for a moment that the entire country goes to a $15 per hour minimum wage, what's going to happen is one of a few things, right? The first thing that could happen is people laid off. The second thing that would happen is that we're going to see prices rising. They're going to have to make it up somehow. Where's the money come from? It's going to come from me, you. So how is this a good thing? I'm not sure. Is it a bad thing? I mean, I know people should be making more money and that's great, but to mandate it, like this, I don't know, at that incredible jump in the hourly. I mean, what do you think?
I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, it seems as though a lot of businesses can only stay in business because they pay slave wages, and maybe they shouldn't be in business if they can't make enough money to pay their people a reasonable amount of money. Although it seems to me that 15 is a bit high, because then what we've done is we've eliminated a bunch of entry-level positions that people maybe, it's not worth 15. You know, just some part-time student labor or some weekend stuff. I mean, it's just, I have mixed feelings about it. I don't know. Let's find out what happens before we condemn it.
I mean, if you think about it, you have to sell for each person at McDonald's $15 menu items per hour. So if you have two guys working the line, three people, cash registers and somebody in the back doing.
Yeah, it's usually variety. Overstaffed. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's probably going to be a problem.
You're going to have lines at McDonald's. Major lines at McDonald's. That's what I see.
Probably, because they're probably lay off two people.
And you know what they'll do also? You're going to see much more of those self-checkout things that don't work, where you have to put this your thing in the bag and it weighs it, and then it doesn't work, and you got to put it back, and then you always got to call the person over anyway.
I know. Yeah, they have that all over the place.
Seriously, have you ever gone through one of the self-service deals where you didn't have to call the person over?
Yeah, yeah.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
For more than one product? Come on.
Yeah.
Wow, you're impressive.
I know how to work these machines.
Would you naturally navigate towards the self-service checkout?
Look and see if there's long line. If there's long lines, yes, then I'll go there. Otherwise, I'd rather go to a checker.
Right. I just find that, especially when you're like at Home Depot, when you're putting those heavy things, you got to put, you know, you buy a 2x4.
I've never gone out of Home Depot without having them come over. It's not possible.
It's not possible.
I'm talking about the grocery stores.
Right.
And Costco has, a couple Costco's now have this. There's not the one local here, but the one up in Washington State has a self checkout thing, and does a lot of items, and it seems to work pretty well.
Now, if you put a little something, let's say you put a box of Q-tips, doesn't weigh very much, right? You ring one up and you put three in your bag. You think it would know?
No.
No, it's about weight, isn't it?
No, some of these it depends. I don't know. I think that they have an eye in the sky or something. I don't think cheating these guys out of Q-tips is really a good use of your time. And besides that, when you go to Costco, you're buying a pallet of Q-tips if you're buying any. You're not buying a little box.
Right. Listen, just a quick announcement. Tomorrow, Wednesday, at 1 p.m. Eastern, there is a webinar we're doing, Finding Reversals. It's going to be at TriggerCharts.com. You go to TriggerCharts.com/events, and it's a freebie. So you can go check that out, and we'll do a webinar which will kind of guide you through a live charting exercises on where we see some reversals happening and how to actually identify them. I wanted to also, I gave you a chart here, which is a little bit late in the show for this, but we were talking about Carl Icahn before.
Yeah.
And remember how you had this, actually. You nailed this really well. The Icahn Enterprises.
Right.
How it skyrocketed into 2014 and then just fell back to earth.
Right.
Look at that chart. I don't know what this has to do with exactly, other than the fact that, you know, we were always wondering why all that he has and all that he's doing, and for a long time the stock was just doing nothing. Remember that forever?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden just skyrocketed.
Well, that's because I noticed, because I'm looking for this all the time, that he was doing a lot of insider buying of his own stock for months. And then it skyrocketed, and now I don't see him selling that stock, though. I could be wrong. Maybe I missed it.
You know, it's interesting, if you think about it, when we talk about insider trading, buying your own stock with knowledge of what's happening is not insider trading. How does that work?
It makes no sense to me.
Hmm. So it's legalized insider trading, and that's why you like to track that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it makes sense.
It's obvious something's up when somebody's buying and buying and buying their own stock out of the blue. That's how Ballmer became rich. Should have paid attention back then. I mean, Ballmer was buying Microsoft stock left there. He had some stock, but I think he went 10x. He took all his money and he kept pumping it into Microsoft when the stock was down, you know, and before it made its giant moves. And Ballmer became a billionaire. People don't realize this, but Ballmer's a billionaire because he invested his hard-earned cash into the company he worked for. That's how he became rich.
Well, of course. What did you think it was? Did you think it was working for minimum wage? I mean, seriously, what do you think?
And he wasn't an entrepreneur. Ballmer's the richest, as far as I know, he's the richest non-entrepreneur ever.
What did they bring him in for originally? I mean, it wasn't for his technical savvy, was it?
Pals. He was a marketing guy. He worked at Procter & Gamble for a little bit, and he was old pals with Bill.
Mm, I got you.
They went to school together.
So before we get to our stocks, I want to ask you or mention that, you know, this Alibaba IPO is coming soon. So, you know,
yeah, this is going to be something to see.
The big question is it going to suck the life out of many of the other China stocks? There's only so much room you can have in a portfolio for these things. And if you're looking at Alibaba compared to some of these other stocks and you want to get in on the IPO, you know, you kind of, what are you going to do? Well, as a money manager, you're going to say, well, I got a certain quadrant of my money that's dedicated to stocks of China, maybe technology, maybe even in the U.S. So I kind of am wondering what's going to happen with like a Weibo, which I've been a problem. You know, I've always said has been a problem. Sina, which is down, I don't know, 35% from the high. So Baidu is actually something that it looks like it could be starting to crack here. But just throw that out there that if anybody's looking for some interesting ideas, I mean, already some of these have taken a hit for a variety of reasons, whether it was that, you know, the Sina and Sohu having problems with their, you know, the things that they could produce. And Baidu just seems to be just, you know, doing great and then it struggles. It does great and then it struggles. Great company, by the way. But there's a lot of short interest and a lot of the short guys out there looking to, you know, hit these things. So I just thought I'd mention that. Something to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. I should start looking at it myself. Well, what do we got for the stocks?
All right. Well, with the stocks, this is obviously a game that we play. It's not an offer to buy or sell any security. Of course, trading in stocks is very risky, and you have to use your own judgment as well as maybe the judgment of a professional. So don't just buy it because we're doing it. John C. Dvorak, myself, or Horowitz Company clients may own positions, and we'll duly note that. So where are we? Lots of nice green on here. A couple of things that are sticking out, which are frankly surprising to me, but in a way they're not. I'll go through this. Anheuser-Busch up 7.75%. Dicom Industries up 5%, still holding on there. You had the El Paso Pipeline just cranking along up 10.5%. DaVita finally turned. Remember, it was down. We were wondering. Now it's up 4%. Sina still up 34%.
That's Ruth's short.
Yep, Ruth's, which I'm so surprised that which is Ruth's Hospitality Group. Remember, the thesis was beef prices were going up, and it would be very difficult for them.
I get the sense that they have some long-term deals that you're unaware of.
Well, if that's the case, you got to find the places behind it that are going to struggle because they can't raise their prices. And now we're seeing a major poultry war going on. You see that? Yep, yeah, exactly. Hillshire Farms is in play, and Tyson's looking to buy, and Pilgrim's Pride is involved in this, and there's all this now M&A activity going on, and prices are being raised, and fighting going on, and very interesting what's going on in that whole chicken space. Don't forget, a lot of this was, we saw that last year, Smithfield Foods, the pork distributor, was bought by a company in China. That raised a lot of flags. That was a big concern.
Yeah.
But anyway, AGCO Industries, flat. Destination on XL, a big man shop, not doing such big work here. Navistar flat. China Housing and Land, you got stopped out of that. Yep. That wasn't a 20%. You told me that last week.
No, it says 20%.
But it's $2. Would that be a 20% stock?
Well, yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, then you did not.
Well, you can stop me. I mean, I want to follow it, though, and so I probably put it back on. But
well, you definitely stopped out because now it's down 20% if you held it. So there you go. So it was stopped out. Let's see. Okay. D.R. Horton. I'm really kind of surprised about D.R. Horton because we are seeing a slowdown in the area of housing, and we've seen some interesting alerts on that. We saw that
construction spending was down. Yeah, this is one of your shorts that I didn't like.
I like it. I still like it. I just not liking that it's not going our direction, but I do like it. I still like the whole idea of the spring season is going to be problematic for these companies. And I also think that, you know, what they're riding right now is the fact that bonds have been really doing well and being bought, which means that interest rates are coming down. And as such, you know, that's good for them right now. But I still think there's some headwinds they're facing. The big thing that we're seeing in the housing space is really not so much the single family homes, it's the multiple, it's the apartment complexes and all that that's going on. That's where the big numbers and the growth. You strip that out, which you can't really do, but if you did strip that out, there's like the new home sales are lousy. So anyway, Weibo up 8.5% on my POS thesis.
Yeah.
Acorn up 5.5%. That's on the M&A.
That's
on the
iDrive. That's a good call on Weibo, I have to say.
Thank you. It's got to break this 18. It doesn't want to break this 18. It just doesn't. Every time it gets down there, it kind of moves
back. It does.
Oh, yeah. SunCoke, flat. Herbalife, we shorted that flat a little bit down. Chipotle, look at this bugger. This thing was down to, what was it down to? 475 after some concerning notes on the price of food, margins, and all that got just absolutely killed. And it just turned around on a dime.
Like, yeah, you're going to lose later on this one.
Yeah, made on the other one 6.5% or 6%, and then we took the short again, and now it's down. What are we down there? 5.5%. So amazing on the move from where we entered it at 552 and closed it out at 519. It's now bought it back when it came back up to that to 522. It's at 550 again. This is like right when this is the right where it was. It's right where it was. Crazy. Your Bank of California doing very nicely. 1 weekend or so up 2%, and Umpqua Holdings up 4%.
Yeah, I just did business with Umpqua. They're moving into the area. There was a new Umpqua. They bought some other little bank out, community bank. It's a community bank, and it's regulated slightly differently. And it's a very nice bank, very good bank.
Well, it's got to be community. It's not like Umpqua National.
Right, just Umpqua.
What is Umpqua, by the way? Where is that? What is that?
It's some Indian tribe, isn't it?
Oh, is that what it is? Uh-huh. All right. Do you have any particular... Oh, by the way, you should take a look at like Las Vegas Sands and Wynn. They're getting killed on the whole idea that China is cracking down on Macau and all the money you can bring in and take out of there.
Yeah.
But it's starting to roll over. I do not have any picks for this week because I'm really kind of concerned about what's going to happen on Thursday.
Well, let's do a short.
Oh, of?
Skull.
Oh, okay. Well, that works.
And I got an insider trading stock. This guy, I'll open up his.
This is historic.
What?
You don't have any shorts.
I do. I like shorts, but I don't have any shorts on the list.
Right. There's none.
I know.
You haven't had shorts in the longest time.
I know. I've been hoping to find a market that I feel comfortable shorting, but I haven't seen it.
Hmm.
I mean, you're good at coming in and out and finding shorts in an up market, but I just don't trust it.
Okay.
So this guy, Ray Barry, director of TFM, has been buying like crazy.
TFM.
He's bought $1.4 million worth of stock on the 29th, $4.9 million worth of stock on the 30th, and $6.8 million worth of stock June 2nd, just recently.
And this is a position that really it was up 8% today.
Yeah.
Wow. What happened today?
Nothing from what I can tell.
Yeah, this guy bought millions of shares, what he did.
Well, it's up, but it's not up to its high. I'm looking just at a short term. It was up as high as $55. This, I believe, even though when it comes to these sorts of things, I don't really do that much research, but it seems to me to be Whole Foods has done so well for itself, and not the stock necessarily, but in terms of the people wanting these sorts of grocery stores that are not Winn-Dixie. And you know what I'm saying?
Anything but Winn-Dixie.
Anything but Winn-Dixie in these sorts of places. They want these nouveau stores that have that appeal to the mod, especially the millennials.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these people are crazy. I know, obviously, my son's one and he's married just another one. And they have a very unique way of seeing the world. And one of the ways is that they see the world as buying stuff that costs too much, in my opinion. And these sorts of stores, these little trendoid stores, they seem, there's like Central Market up in the Washington State area. And there's another Central Market that competes with, I think they're out of Texas. And then there's the Whole Foods out of Texas. I think a lot of these are very appealing. If you've been to a Whole Foods, the place is packed all the time.
Fresh Market's great. Have you been in one?
No.
It's great. Very overpriced. Oh, very overpriced.
Yeah, overpriced. High margins, which is unusual for the store business.
You ever been in a Wegmans?
I have been in a Wegmans.
Oh, is that the best?
It's a really outstanding product, yeah.
Oh. Sure. I mean, they make their own stuff. I went into the Publix the other day, and I said, do you have any more of that pretzel bread rolls? My son likes to have the sandwich on the pretzel bread roll.
Yeah.
Let me see. I'll check. Oh, yes, we'll get you some. So he brought me four, put it in a bag, and he rang it up. And I took the bag, and I'm like, these are frozen. Why are you giving me frozen? We don't make those here. Like, really? He hands me frozen bread.
Yeah, a lot of stores have a whole bakeries in them. And,
this has a bakery, too, but they don't make it, I guess.
It must be too much work.
I guess so. Yeah. Well...
Well,
that's what
there's
you get.
A number of store chains that are, you know, you visit. I was in, when I was in Detroit last week or whenever it was a couple weeks ago, I went to one of these, what's the name of this? I can't remember the name. I have to get the name. This giant store that competes with like Walmart. It's called Mealy or something. I can't remember the name of it. But they, the thing is so, it's things like 10 football fields.
Wow.
Anyway, I'll talk about that later. Maybe I'll even look into the stock. Anyway, so Fresh Market, TFM, I'm all in on that one.
Okay, I'm looking for Detroit grocery stores. That's, Honeybee, E&L, Farmer, Harbortown, Thrifty. No. Imperial? No. Nope. Yeah. Nope. We're Mob with Shoppers? No, that's not it.
Everybody knows what this place is. It won't be.
It's like is it a high-end place?
It's like a Walmart. It's very. In fact, if you didn't know what it was, you'd think you were in Walmart, except for that they didn't have all the crazy signage.
It's not Zaccaro's, is it?
No, I think it starts with an M.
Wagon Market, Whole Foods, O'Brien's.
And it's not really a grocery store. It's an everything.
Ah. I don't know what it is. Mealy.
Well, Mealy is the vacuum cleaner, but for some reason I'm reminded of the that name.
I gotcha. All right, well, we're going to see you next week, and thanks for joining us. And if you have any questions or anything, just write us info@DHUnplugged.com. Of course, you could follow The Real Dvorak on Twitter or Andrew Horowitz, one word, on Twitter. And come and visit us and listen in to John and his sidekick, Adam. Adam wouldn't appreciate that. And a sidekick, Adam, on...
He does all the work.
Yeah, no agenda. And, of course, the Disciplined Investor podcast as well on a weekly basis. And visit all of our sites. We have all sorts of goodies there for you. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Adios.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.